Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Our toolkit is substantial but insufficient. Therefore, I will continue to work with congressional leaders to find a way forward.
Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson after the bailout bill failed to gain approval in Congress. 24 hours ago, he thought he had found the tools to pass the bill. Now it's back to the drawing board. Good morning. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Frustration in Washington and around the country yesterday as Congress fails to pass the bailout bill. What broke down? How did a surefire approval turn into a resounding defeat? And where do we go from here? We will start today with four local members of Congress, two Republicans and two Democrats, two who voted for the bill and two who voted against it. Joining me now is Congressman Scott Garrett, a Republican from New Jersey's 5th District, which includes a part of Bergen and Passaic counties, and the city of Paramus. He voted against the bill yesterday. Also joining us is fellow Republican Vito Fisella, representing Staten Island. He voted for the bailout bill. Congressman, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Congressman Garrett, let's start with you. You voted no. Why did you oppose this measure, and when did you make up your mind?
Well, I guess it goes all the way back to the very first Saturday, a week ago Saturday in the afternoon, when the Treasury Secretary sent down the three-page bill spending $700 billion with no oversight and no controls. It was at that time that I realized there was no benefit to this, and since that time I've not seen any real economists that say this is going to be the guarantee solution, so I've been opposed to it since day one.
So you were not happy with any of the changes made to the bill?
No, most of the changes, in my estimation, were improvements to a bad bill, but really didn't get to the core problem with it, and that is that the bill itself does not address the fundamental problems out there. The bill itself could actually create more problems by raising the debt limit from 9.8 up to $11.3 trillion. There were solutions, there were alternatives, but unfortunately, our Treasury Secretary was just not willing to accept or consider any other alternatives.
Congressman Fisella, what about you? Why did you vote yes?
Well, first off, I think, you know, Scott and I agree probably 99% of the times on things, and in this one, we probably have the same, you know, same approach to it, and we just came down on different sides. And I guess at the core of it was, as ailing as the patient was, the financial service industry and the lack of liquidity and capital and the increase, not just in the stock market and the volatility and the failing banks and financial institutions, but also the fact that credit was becoming very difficult to obtain for small business owners and big business owners. And I just felt that the patient had the potential to infect the entire family, that being the U.S. taxpayer and our national economy. And I felt that the best solution, or the best of the worst-case scenarios, was the bill yesterday that would have brought a little bit of confidence into the markets and brought about a stability, not just to the equity markets, but the credit markets as well.
And we can take some calls about this vote and where we go from here. We particularly want to hear from constituents of these congressmen. Are these your congressmen? Are you happy with how Vito Fisella and Scott Garrett voted? And what should be the next step? What would you like for them to take back to the House of Representatives come Wednesday night or Thursday when they meet again to start talking about changes to this bill? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Congressman Garrett, how did you feel when you saw the Dow start tanking by more than 700 points? Did you feel any sense of responsibility for that?
Well, obviously, everyone on the floor, I think, was concerned about that, and some of us saw it coming as well. When you consider the fact that the Treasury Secretary, who's supposed to be the man out there trying to calm the markets and try to get the system rolling on a smooth plane, came out on day one and said, you know, the world is falling apart, the sky is falling, and we're going to have a global meltdown if by tomorrow we don't pass his bill. Well, you built up such expectation on that day, and the market was just so anticipating something coming out of Congress, anything coming out of Congress by that time, that you almost built yourself up for a fall. So Congress could have passed nothing, just a minimal bill, and they would have done better than passing nothing as we did. But the expectation has probably led up to what we saw on the debt fall in the stock market.
Congressman Fasola, do you feel the same way? Do you feel that regardless of this passage of this bailout plan, that and I've been hearing from economists and reading in the papers that this isn't a quick fix, that Wall Street is still going to undergo these wild gyrations. Do you think that we would have seen something different on Wall Street had this gone through?
I think so, and nobody's talking about a quick fix, because people like Scott, who I can understand again, and many folk who voted against it, I know have been trying for years to bring about a sense of sanity to our regulatory regime and ensuring that our markets were more free and more open and more transparent, and that systemic risk was a potential problem. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. I think as much as we analyzed this problem, the core of it was the housing bubble that burst. And about August of 2007, you started to see the unraveling of credit and the deleveraging that will continue, which I think economists will say is, again, not the quick fix, because ultimately not only will it impact pensions and IRAs and 401ks and whether you're in the market or not, you're going to be affected, but ultimately could impact the cost of borrowing in a significant way, whether you want to buy a car or send your kid to college on a student loan or credit card debt. And I just think that since the private market has had such a difficulty deleveraging on its own, and every ad hoc approach has not solved the problem, that is a worst-case scenario, or the least of the scenarios presented was an injection of public capital to bring about stability and more confidence and inject liquidity that clearly has been needed.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking with Staten Island Congressman Vito Fasella and New Jersey Congressman Scott Garrett about their votes on the bailout package. We will be speaking later with two Democrats, one who voted for and one who voted against, and get their position. Let's talk about party leadership here. We have a clip of Republican presidential candidate John McCain, who earlier in the day was talking as if the vote were, there was an expectation that it was going to pass. He was talking about how he was part of getting Republicans on board and behind the bill. Then the bill failed, and here's what he had to say about it.
Our leaders are expected to leave partisanship at the door and come to the table to solve our problems. Senator Obama and his allies in Congress infused unnecessary partisanship into the process. Now is not the time to fix the blame. It's time to fix the problem.
He's blaming Barack Obama and Democrats, but this was a bill that was largely crafted by the Bush administration and supported by President Bush, the leader of the country, the top Republican, and by his Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. What does this say about the Republican Party's leadership on this when two-thirds of Republicans in the House voted against this measure? Scott Garrett, do you want to take that?
No, you wanted to chime in on. Well, I think it shows at the end of the day that whichever way you voted on this bill, no like myself or yes like Vito, that you were not letting politics be the driving force. Vito had his economic reasons, as he's just stated, and justifications for doing so, and I hear them and I understand where he's coming from on them, and that's appropriate. Mine were based on the reasons I set forth. I can tell you, to a man that I spoke to, and woman I spoke to on the floor, the debate of do we do this along party lines, or do we not do this along party lines, do we do this because of electability in the fall or what have you, those discussions just didn't occur. It was, we have a problem on Wall Street, we realize that can have ramifications on Main Street, and which way do we think is the best way to solve the problem? And, good people can disagree, just as the economists out there will disagree on which way it is. And the members in our party, I think, just disagreed on which was the best technique to get to that ultimate goal.
For what it's worth, I would agree with everything Scott just said. Having said that, I think to a degree what John McCain did say was right. People want Democrats and Republicans to try to come together and fix the problem and, worry about the blame later. And believe me, there's a lot of blame to be tossed around. But for now, The analogy is either a sick patient or the building's on fire. Let's put out the fire and worry about pointing fingers later. And I also think, it shows that whether you're a Democrat or Republican, it seems to me, when I heard people talking yesterday, even publicly giving speeches, being the most important vote they've cast in 16 or 18 years in the House, people took it pretty seriously. So I would never question the motivations, but at the end of it, people saw a problem, and I guess they all, each of them, 435 or roughly, said their version of fixing it was either the right one that we voted on yesterday or a different approach would be better for the economy as a whole.
Let's take a call. Rob from Pompton Plains, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'm in the mortgage banking industry, and I just wanted to point out that, even though both, legislators are doing their best to try to come to a solution, most of the legislators don't understand the core root of the problem, which is that no matter how much capital you infuse into capital markets, the lenders are still not going to make the risky loans they made prior, which is not going to allow the housing market to recover. On a $400,000 starter home in the tri-state area, they're not going to allow $10,000, $20,000 down payments anymore. They're going to be looking for the $40,000 to $80,000 down payment. So the housing market's not going to recover with this bill. It's possible that the companies themselves and that Wall Street will recover. But you have to let the bad loans fall out of the system before you'll see a true recovery.
But Rob, from how I understand this, this isn't so much about infusing more capital. I mean, the Federal Reserve continues to pump more money into the system as it did yesterday. But
yes.
This is about buying the federal government buying off those bad mortgage-backed securities. Isn't that substantially different?
Well, you see, when you have collateralized debt obligation or SIVs or any of these other chopped-up mortgages that are overvalued, even if we skim them off the top, it's not still going to allow the average borrower to go out there with a 10%, 5%, 3% down payment. And we've seen stated loans go from a 580 FICO to stated loans almost disappear completely. You can have a stated loan, but you must prove assets, and you have to be in the 700s. So it's not going to allow the average consumer to to borrow more money or to buy a larger home. Now, it may free up capital as far as credit card or as far as consumer debt on the cars. But if we're addressing this as a way to cure or help ameliorate the housing problem, it's not going to happen because the lenders are not going to jump back into those high-risk loans, no matter how much money is bought off in bad debt. Those are the loans that we didn't want to write initially. We never wrote them, but we didn't want them to write initially. And then when they were written, once they're gone, you'll at least have a stability. You'll have some floor in the housing market until you've eliminated the overheated market and the housing market, mm-hmm. until the prices come down and until only qualified people are borrowing money. It doesn't matter how much capital you put in the market. All you're doing is taking bad debt.
Rob, thank you for that call. Congressman Garrett, I know you have already said that you didn't think that this bill addressed the fundamentals, given the primer in the real estate market that Rob just gave us. Congressman Fasella, what would be your response to his view that this doesn't help the housing market at all, and it really doesn't help the little guy except the person who needs to increase the line on their credit card and can't, or wants to buy a new car?
Well, for full disclosure, my major in college is real estate finance at the University of Pennsylvania back in the 80s, and spent a lot of semesters studying mortgage-backed securities. So I have a little bit of an understanding of the markets and the products themselves. And I think the caller is absolutely right because, as I mentioned before, the housing bubble is what caused this problem, but it was also lax lending standards. And we've gone 180 degrees from ninja loans, which is no income, no job, no assets, to the other end of the spectrum now of basically you got to give your left arm to be able to get money. And the other sort of portion of that is the lending institutions just don't trust each other. When I say trust, is they don't even know what they have, let alone what the other guy has. And you've seen this house of cards been built, this unregulated market in the credit default swaps area that people couldn't even tell you what the notional value is. Is it $58 trillion, $65 trillion?
And yet this bill doesn't get at any of that or address any of those problems.
Well, I think what it attempts to do is what the caller said, is to obtain or to take those assets and that are now currently illiquid. In other words, there's no buyer for them, to free them up and let the Treasury or someone, some entity, public entity, hold on to them as long as possible and work out because they're not worth zero. Many of them are worth something. Mm-hmm. And then that ultimately will get the liquidity and capital and push the money back out into the system so the ordinary homeowner, whether you live in Staten Island or Brooklyn or Jersey, can borrow at a more reasonable rate. You know, rates, the differential between the risk-free rate and some of the other instruments are at unprecedented levels right now. And what that does is just makes the cost of borrowing money a lot greater and then more difficult for the economy to grow from this point forward.
I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Let's go to another call. Rachel from Glen Rock, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say I'm in Scott Garrett's zone, and I usually disagree with him probably 99% of the time, but I do support his vote on this bill. I think it's just being pushed way too fast through Congress, and while it's a major issue, we do need to take time. Like he said, this was a bad bill with a few improvements, but that doesn't make it better.
So, Rachel, does he get your vote this fall?
Probably not still. I'll probably vote Democratic.
Great. Thank you, Rachel, for...
I lived in Jersey. I'd vote for Scott Garrett.
For calling WEO. But you live in Staten Island, Congressman Fasola. What have your constituents been saying? I can't imagine that Staten Island Republicans were calling your office in droves and saying, please pass this bill.
Well, it's tough to say. I think it was somewhat split. You know, on some days it was vote no, on some days it was vote yes. But at the end of this is not we're representatives. We'll represent our constituencies. But this was the vote on principle and conscience, and doing what you think is right. And I just thought it was the right thing to do. So I wasn't a Republican or a Democrat. I just thought the right thing to do for the country, for our economy, was to vote yes. Again, not to take issue with anyone who voted no. I understand Scott is one of the brightest members of Congress, especially when an economic issue. So in this case, we just see it differently. But many of my constituents in Staten Island and Brooklyn are also directly or very indirectly impacted by the financial service industry. And I think we need to keep that financial service industry strong and growing, not just for Staten Island, but New York City and the tax revenue it generates. But clearly, at the end of it all, was what would be the impact to our national economy if we don't do something? And I just felt that we have to do something to keep the damage or the conflagration, the disease,
right,
whatever, from spreading.
Congressman Fasola, how much of this, though, is about political cover? You're one of only 65 Republicans who voted for this. If you look at the numbers of so-called swing district congressmen whose seats are up for grabs, 30 voted against this bill while only 8 voted against this. Because your name is not on the ballot this fall, did you feel freed up to vote your conscience on this?
No, I'd like to think in the 11 years I've been in Congress, I voted what I thought was right every step of the way. So in this case, I think the magnitude or the impact of the vote just happens to be great. Listen, we have votes in Congress that rename post offices. You know, those are consequential maybe to the family members of the person being named, but it doesn't have the impact that the yesterday's vote would have. I just felt, and I'm not going to question the motivations of anybody who votes. That's something they have to live with, and the voters will agree or disagree. But I do think, if anything, the question now is, okay, yesterday is over. What do we do now? What's
right.
Obligations, well, and reconvene as soon as possible to get something done.
That's a great segue, Congressman Fasola, and we'll wrap up with this this question for both of you, and I'll start with you, Congressman Fasola. What would you like to see? What do you think will happen? What needs to happen to get a bailout package passed?
I think Scott touched on a little earlier, just the communication, if you will, the putting aside partisanship, sit down and say, what is it going to take to get to the fundamentals, to bring confidence back to the markets, to free liquidity, to have a bill of substance, not just the political document, but a bill of substance that's going to help solve this problem. And that should be, you know, Democrats and Republicans coming together almost immediately, as soon as possible, and but, don't leave Washington until it's done.
But I don't understand how this wasn't bipartisan. I mean, you had both, both legislative leaders were in support of it, the president was in support of it, both candidates were in support of this. How was this partisan?
Well, I didn't say, I think, well, you saw some of the speeches yesterday. I'm not saying, you know, we're all big boys and girls, and we shouldn't let speeches affect it, but it did get a little, you know, silly on the floor of the House when, you know, pointing fingers in such a crisis. I don't think the people really deserve that, and I don't think they expect it. I think what you saw here was, not to get too much into the process, but you typically defer to your leadership if you can to cut or to work in a bipartisan way, but this vote was such an important vote. Not to say others aren't, but this one is so important that individual members basically said, listen, we're going to do what we think is right, not just a party vote, not just, you know, for, you know, the election on the horizon. What's the right thing to do? Obviously, there were enough people who said, we don't like it. So therefore, if we still think something needs to be done, address those who had problems with the bill.
Well, and I want to turn it to Scott Garrett, since he did have a problem with it. Congressman Garrett, quickly, what do you want to see done?
Well, first of all, thank you to Rachel for being one out of 100, at least, so hopefully I can up that percentage for Rachel. What needs to be done is actually what some of us were doing while those speeches were going on the floor yesterday. We were in the basement of the Capitol in a bipartisan meeting, bringing in some outside economists, looking at about three or four different ideas and solutions to this problem. That solutions that would address some of the questions that Rob had brought up is how do you address the underlying housing market, mortgage market, and that sort of thing that is really what is the fundamental problems. I'm hoping to continue those, and this time, hopefully, the administration and leadership will say, we'll look outside the box, we'll look outside of what Paulson said, and we'll consider something other than just this one-size-fits-all bill that they gave us.
Congressman Scott Garrett from New Jersey's 5th District, which includes parts of Bergen County, Passaic County, and the city of Paramus, and Congressman Vito Fisella representing the 13th District, which covers Staten Island. Thank you both for joining me here on WNYC.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we'll hear from House Democrats Jose Serrano of the Bronx and Gregory Meeks of Queens about their vote and what they thought of Speaker Pelosi's comments criticizing Republicans for the economic mess. And we will continue to take your calls, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC.
It's important for the American public and for the markets to stay calm because things are never smooth in Congress and to understand that it will get done.
Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama reacting to the failed economic rescue package. I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. And now that we've heard from two Republicans on their differing votes yesterday, let's bring in two Democrats who differed as well. Gregory Meeks is a congressman from New York's 6th District representing Southeast Queens. He voted for the economic rescue package, and he also sits on the House Finance Committee. Jose Serrano is a congressman from the Bronx. He opposed the measure. Congressman, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
Congressman Meeks, I'll start with you. When you cast your yes vote, did you expect this bill to pass?
Well, I thought it was going to pass. I thought that we had worked in a bipartisan way, and there had been commitments by the Republican leadership to deliver X amount of votes and the Democratic leadership so that it would have been us working together. It took a few weeks to get done. But ultimately, you know, neither side, I thought, got exactly what they wanted, which probably was a good compromise. And the best thing to do was to vote for this so that we could not have the liquidity and credit markets frozen. So I did anticipate it passing. I was surprised that only 65 Republicans voted for it.
Congressman Serrano, you were the only member of the New York City delegation to vote no. Do you think that the rest of the country just isn't convinced that this was a good plan and that here in New York it's difficult to gain some perspective on the needs of Wall Street versus Main Street?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there is much support for it on the streets, if you will.
What have you been hearing from your constituents?
Well, for the couple of weeks, I've been hearing when I was either in the Bronx or getting phone calls telling us that who's going to bail me out was the phrase that I heard the most. This is one of those issues where the public understands immediately. They may not understand all of the intricacies of the bailout plan, but they understand that some people with a lot of money are getting money from the government and they're having trouble paying their rent or paying their mortgage or sending their kid to school. So this was an easy one for them to understand. Now, just for the record, I win re-election, fortunately for me, by the highest percentage in the nation, 96%. So I did not vote based on any fear of losing my re-election. I just felt it was a blank check, and I couldn't do that. I could not give the people who caused the problems to begin with a blank check with no provisions to tie their hands down for future misbehavior. And as chairman of the Financial Services Committee of the Appropriations Committee, I know that starting next year, the same people who were involved in creating the mess would be supervising the recovery.
But it wasn't a blank check. My understanding is that there were that the Democrats, your party, worked very hard to get all sorts of provisions in place to check the power of Treasury Secretary Paulson to. First of all, spend $700 billion. You've got to measure in to parcel that out over time and to give the Congress a chance to look at it again and see if it's working before it releases any more money. And there was some provision there against conflict of interest, against firms that would benefit from the bailout, helping to sort it out.
As well, as diversity.
Anytime
Congressman Meeks?
$700 billion of asset management, so that we're not just leaving it in the hands of the same few, but there's statement in there that there has to be more diversified as far as asset management, which would reduce the risk. It also brings in smaller and medium-sized firms that also manage some of the money.
So, Congressman Meeks, you were satisfied with these provisions, but Congressman Serrano, you were not. Why not?
Because those provisions did not speak to the needs to keep people from losing their homes. It did not tie down the hands of the people who caused the problems to the extent that I wanted. And most importantly, it was a bill that dealt with the issue from the top down and not from the bottom up. Why should we tell people, here's $700 billion of your tax dollars, put you in debt for next year and the year after, and who knows for how long, but no one is going to address your credit card debt. Nobody's going to address your inability to pay your rent. Nobody's going to address your inability to pay the mortgage. I just was not sold on it. Now, I realized that the bill that was voted on yesterday was better than the bill that was presented to us. And I realized that there are chances you take. But then the people who vote for it also take the chance that if it had passed, nothing would have happened. After all, you know, isn't capitalism something where you allow the market to adjust itself? So here on one hand, you have people who tell you, leave the market alone. And then people say, but when some people lose money at the top, infuse taxpayer dollars to bail them out. I wasn't sold.
Let me just say this. One of the reasons why some of the Republicans were against it was because it did the bill did the very same things that my dear friend and colleague Jose Serrano said it didn't. It had in there a provision to help prevent home foreclosures. It talked about buying these assets, some of them that are bad because people are not able to pay them. We can now refinance them so the individuals can stay in their home. If we do nothing, those individuals will be foreclosed on. I was telling individuals in my district, which is a large, home ownership, to hold on for 30 days thinking that this would pass, because then I would be in a better position to have their mortgages refinanced so that we can go back to the rates that they can afford, because those that can't, they got the teaser rates initially, and they were paying it for the first 2 to 3 years, but then when it went up, when the rates adjusted, they can't afford it. So this gave us the opportunity to do that. And yes, there's got to be more regulation that we've got to look at down the road with reference to the non-regulated mortgage brokers who, in communities like mine, they came in. But
when you look at what, you know, there is a segment where Wall Street does meet Main Street because if an individual needs a car loan, and if you see what's taking place in the markets right now, particularly the banking index, which was down 20% yesterday, and you can see that we lost Washington Mutual, we lost Wachovia, then the opportunity for individuals to get a loan, to buy a car, or to even to get to school for education to improve oneself, that becomes less. So this is it is tremendously important because Main Street does meet Wall Street. Now, I agree, finally, on this, that do I like how we got here? Individuals that caused the problems? Absolutely not. But when we have a car wreck, and that's what we have, and the car wreck is in the middle of the and it was caused by a drunk driver. We don't like the drunk driver, but we still have to rescue the drunk driver and move the car so that the thoroughfare can open up so that people can still pass through. And those that got 401Ks and pension plans, they're at stake here, and we've got to do something to help them.
We will talk in a moment about what you think needs to happen next, what both of you think needs to happen next, but I want to get at some of the politics underlying this.
Can I just answer what Gregory just said?
Congressman Serrano, briefly, please.
Yes. When people have been in trouble with their mortgage for a long time now, and Congress and the president and Paulson didn't move on that, it's the minute that the people who were getting $50 and $100 million and $10 million bonuses began to be in danger of losing their bonuses that Congress decided we had to bail them out, number one. Number two. I represent the poorest congressional district in the nation, which is within walking distance of the wealthiest congressional district in the nation. That's a tale of two cities. But the interesting note about this is that a year from now, 2 years from now, when I want education funding, housing funding, veterans funding, we're going to be told you can't do that because we have to pay down the debt incurred by the bailout. Well, if that's going to happen, then I want to see something for the folks at the bottom as part of the bailout.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We are taking your calls, 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Congressman Serrano, you were you mentioned the long, slow buildup to this painful reality that we're in right now. And it was something that Speaker Nancy Pelosi referred to in her comments on the floor before the bill vote, comments that House Republicans have said caused some of them to change their vote and vote against the bailout package as opposed to voting for it. We're going to play that a segment of it now. It's a little long, but we want to give you the full breadth and depth of what it was that Speaker Pelosi said and why some House Republicans have reacted so vehemently against it. Let's listen.
$700 billion, a staggering number, but only a part of the cost of the failed Bush economic policies to our country. Policies that were built on budget recklessness. When President Bush took office, he inherited President Clinton's surpluses 4 years in a row, budget surpluses. On a trajectory of $5.6 trillion in surplus. And with his reckless economic policies, within 2 years, he had turned that around.
Congressman Meeks, were you surprised by Nancy Pelosi's comments? And did you think that when you heard them, ouch, this is going to ruin, this whole thing's going to go down the tubes because of this?
No, I didn't think that it would go down the tubes because, you know, I made the presumption that, you know, the Republicans have been saying all along, country first. And if country comes first, then you don't change your mind on how you're going to vote simply because somebody said something that may hurt your feelings or that you disagree with. You know, that doesn't change the substance of what we were voting on. And I think that's the fallacy in a lot of the arguments that the Republicans are making, that 12 people were going to vote for it, but they didn't vote for it because of what words or somebody said, thereby punishing the rest of the country. You know, what you got to look at is what's at stake here. And what's at stake here is, as I said, is where Wall Street meets Main Street. And so it's bigger than that. So I was surprised that the Republicans didn't come up with the prerequisite number of votes that they had told our leadership that they had which would have passed this piece of legislation.
But do you think that there's some, you know, with a bill like this where everybody's trying to claim that they've reached across the aisle, it's bipartisan, it's bicameral, everybody's behind it, we've got the president behind it, the Treasury Secretary behind it, that this was sort of a low blow at the last minute to insert this mood into this conversation?
No, because clearly, you know, the administration, the Bush administration, has a credibility problem with most Democrats. And a lot of Democrats.
And yet most Democrats supported this. It was the Democrats who were behind this.
They did put country over partisanship. The fact of what the president's administration has said and had done in the past did not get in their way of doing what they thought was the right thing, as opposed to what the Republicans. There's been back and forth on a partisanship throughout this, and it should not change an individual's mind simply because one said one thing as opposed to the other. John McCain inserted politics in this when he said he was taking off of campaigning and coming in to resolve this. Barack Obama did that, but no one thought that, oh, we can't vote for this because John McCain's going to try to take credit for it. We said we got to vote for it because we thought it was the right thing to do.
We know Congressman Serrano won re-election last time. Overwhelmingly, he says he didn't cast his vote, concerned about the results in the November elections. How about you, Congressman Meeks? Do you think Democrats will take a beating on this if they are seen by angry constituents as being the party that supported Treasury Secretary Paulson and the Bush administration's plan?
Well, I don't think so. I think that what has to happen is, and where we, if any error had been made here, is that it has not been properly explained to the public. And I think that the public is starting to get a feel of what this means when they saw the market go to a record low yesterday on 777 points, when they see and hear about small business people who use loans to leverage so they can make payrolls. So if someone's not going to get paid this week, they'll see how Wall Street meets Main Street, and they will then have a better understanding of what this is all about. That, I don't think it ever was explained to the public in the way that it should. And if you look at most members of Congress on Democratic side or the Republican side, who are not returning to Congress, who was not thinking about politics, most of them voted yes.
Congressman,
all of them voted yes, in fact.
We need to wrap this discussion up. I'd like to hear from both of you. Do you think we're going to have a bill by the end of the week, and what changes need to be made in order to get that done? I'll start with you, Congressman Jose Serrano, since you voted no.
I think what's going to happen, and probably the best bet if I was in leadership, is simply for Nancy Pelosi, our speaker, to go to the Republicans and say, you know, you have promised us more votes. We need 12 more. We're not going to convince most of the 95 Democrats who voted against it to vote for it. But you know that some of your guys had their feelings hurt by what I said. So, okay, sorry, can you just give us the 12 votes you need?
So no changes, just reaching and soothing calming ruffled feathers.
Yeah, otherwise, exactly, because otherwise the only way you can even deal with the 95 who voted no is to rewrite the bill, and I don't think Wall Street feels there's time for that.
What about you, Congressman Meeks?
Well, that's something that Jose Serrano and I think agree upon. Number one, if you change the bill substantially, that was a bipartisan negotiated bill, then you also put in danger some Democrats that voted for the bill. I think that, and based upon the Republicans' own admission, that the reason why they didn't give the necessary votes that was needed was because they had their feelings hurt because of some words that were said on the floor, not because of they wanted the bill changed, that they would have voted for it. So I think that the bill was fairly negotiated. No side got exact. There were things that I would have loved to have had in the bill that was not in there, and I think there were some things on the other side would have loved that was not in there. So nobody was 100% happy, which is probably what's the best thing to do in a negotiated bill. And so we should just figure out how we can make sure that we get the 12 additional votes that's necessary that the Republicans thought they had.
And just to briefly circle back, Congressman Serrano, I realize now that you're saying no changes, substantial changes need to be made, just soothing the ruffled feathers of Republicans. Does that mean you're going to vote no again when this comes up for another vote?
Yeah, very, very briefly, I feel that the bill was negotiated in good faith.
But you didn't like it.
Well, from day one, I didn't like the concept, the premise of giving Wall Street $700 billion to play with, regardless of what people claim with the restrictions on it.
So there's no way to recraft this to get your yes vote?
It would take a lot.
Thank you. Congressman Jose Serrano from the Bronx and Congressman Gregory Meeks representing Southeast Queens, both Democrats. Thank you for joining me today on WNYC.
Thank you.
Coming up, how to lead and lay off people with kindness. Stay tuned.